to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Dr. Bryce Edwards, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Very
what
well.
You?
Very good, yeah, thank you. It's a bit drizzly and awful in Auckland at the moment.
It's the same in Wellington.
There we go, the whole country's suffering.
Yep.
Hey, we're going to chat to you about a few things this morning because a lot's happened since we last spoke to you in politics, as is the way. We might start with talking a little bit about, so there's the end-of-life choice bill that we're going to chat about. We're also going to talk a bit about housing and some of the changes that have just come in. And we'll also talk a wee bit about the DHB and this new report that's come out about it. I think maybe we should start with housing because that's the most recent in many ways. As of the 1st of July, some new regulations have come into effect. That means that there's sort of, I guess, more support or more rights for tenants in terms of insulation and things like that. There's been a lot of talk about KiwiBuild. There's been a lot of talk about the ways that this government is dealing with housing. What do you see as being, I guess, the key things that are changing or that need to change around housing and particularly renting in New Zealand?
Well, I mean, housing really has been the big public policy issue of the last few years, especially because of the housing affordability crisis that's, you know, gone a bit crazy over the last 10 years. And so it affects everyone, you know. Everyone needs a house. And, you know, at the top end of the scale, it means that, you know, people are having problems, you know, or their current houses are worth huge amounts of money.
Mm.
At the bottom end, you know, people are homeless. And then there's renters who are having trouble affording their rents or getting onto the property ladder. So it really does affect everyone, and it's kind of one of those classic left-right spectrum issues where, you know, there's big debates about whether the state should intervene on the left. You know, we should be having the state building more state housing, maybe stopping the speculation by bringing in capital gains taxes or having more regulation for renters. And it really is... I think, the left agenda that's been winning over the last few years, which means that even the last national government brought in these tougher rules for landlords to make sure that all rental properties are now insulated. And so, yes, on the 1st of July, we have these new rules that mean that if your house can be insulated, it should be, at least on the top and bottom, by your landlord, and they can be fined now. Up to $4,000 if they don't get those houses to those standards, and that money can go to the tenant. So it's quite remarkable.
This is quite remarkable, yeah, because this hasn't, to my knowledge, I could be wrong here, this hasn't really got much of a precedent in New Zealand, at least.
No.
Often a lot of things that hold tenants up from, I guess, taking landlords to the tribunal over issues is that quite often they're not going to see a lot of payout or a lot of, benefit from taking what is actually a very stressful and quite, you know, rigorous process of taking your landlord to the tribunal. This is actually something that people are going to see a direct, a direct positive benefit from.
It could well be. I mean, it's uncertain. It's early days, but you know, and there might be some negative ramifications for taking your landlord to the tenancy tribunal, because we always know that, you know, they, you know, take this seriously, and it could go essentially on your record that you are anti-landlord if the landlord, you know, records that and passes it on to other landlords. So there is that threat of intimidation in the future. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
That's an interesting thing, though, that's a conversation that we kind of have to have, you know, that there is this idea that if you do what is within you, totally within your rights, your legal rights, as well as, I guess, you know, your moral rights to live in a house that's dry and warm and comfortable, you know, to be able to just stand up for yourself, that could get you, I guess, in hot water further down the track with other potential landlords. That's really, you know, shocking in many ways that we have to have that conversation.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, it might not come to that, hopefully not. But, and hopefully we're just going to see landlords that are humiliated by being seen as not providing proper, you know, healthy, warm housing, that they won't go down that track of retaliating in any way. I mean, New Zealand housing stock is pretty bad, and that's why we come to this situation. It is, you know, quite a significant aberration for the developed world to have such bad housing. And because we do have this, you know, so many people renting houses, that it's good to have governments that are finally addressing this problem.
And that's actually interesting as well, because a lot of emphasis has been on Kiwi Build in the media and in the public, but a major part of our country does rent. It's not necessarily about buying a new house or being a first-time homeowner. It's about existing within the rental market. What do you think that this government is doing for renters beyond this legislation, obviously? Is there anything that you can see that might be coming into effect, or things that they could be doing differently?
Well, yes, as we know, the flagship housing policy of this government is Kiwi Build, which is definitely aimed at, you know, the more upper echelons of society. It's more middle-class people, you know, that want to actually spend at least $500,000 on housing. So it's not going to, you know, be able, even if that system works, it's not going to actually affect a majority of young people. But that program has, you know, kind of been discredited, and it's been seen as a bit of a dog now. So I'm sort of hoping that the government's going to turn their attention to maybe state housing, because really that's an area that I think has been neglected by all governments over recent years, and the housing stock has been, you know, kind of eroded, and we're a really low amount of state housing capacity. So back in the 1990s, I think it used to be every 50 New Zealanders there was a state house, whereas now it's like for every 70 New Zealanders. So there's very few state housing, and by worldwide standards it's very low. And of course, because, as we've just been discussing, the private sector doesn't really do very well in providing low cost housing, the state's always been a great option for that. So it would be fantastic if suddenly the government decided, okay, instead of trying to build 100,000 Kiwi Build houses for the rich, maybe we should build 100,000 really quality houses for ordinary people to rent. And I think there is some possibility of, maybe not that, but going in that sort of direction under the new housing minister, Megan Woods.
Yes, after the old cabinet reshuffle last week. Well, we might talk a little bit about the DHB now. The Auditor-General's latest report into the DHB is sort of pointed out that there's years of underinvestment, and then also we've got an ageing and increasingly impoverished population. That comes from head of the Senior Doctors Union, Ian Powell. So what does this report mean, and what's it telling us about the state of the DHB at the moment?
Well, obviously in New Zealand we have a public health system where most of our hospitals are, you know, publicly funded and available free of charge. But of course they operate not as companies, but they have to have, you know, budget sheets where they get a certain amount of funding from government and they have to break even. And frankly, they're not breaking even. They've been having trouble, you know, really over the last 10 years breaking even. So at the moment I think every DHB in the country, so there's 20 of them that control all the hospitals and run them, I think all of them are in deficit at the moment. They're spending more for this financial year than they're getting an income from the government, and it is ballooning. There's some that are worse than others. Canterbury DHB is the worst. I think they are about $100 million basically in debt. And so the government is now sending in someone to kind of sort them out. But altogether, I think all the DHBs are probably going to be in deficit by about $500 million nearly. And so there is a bit of a crisis, and partly it's just because they haven't been funded enough over the recent years, and now they're having to, you know, fix up their buildings, they're having to, you know, catch up. And it's like you said at the start, you know, we have got an aging population, and there are more difficult illnesses that are kind of more expensive to care for. So we're going to have a big conversation about funding health, I think, in the next year or so, because we've also got, what's really interesting is the government has set up a review of housing, sorry, not housing, health, and that's going to be reporting in about a month's time. So it's one of these working groups, essentially, and it could come out with some really radical ideas on how to restructure health. And we'll talk about whether governments are putting enough tax dollars into them. And of course, that will come back to issues, therefore, about whether we need a capital gains tax, or whether we need to increase progressive taxation, etc. So it's kind of one of those big picture
issues. Yeah, bit of a long-term question, that one, really. Just quickly before we head off, I do want to talk about the end of life bill, because that's a huge thing that's going on. And again, it's a bit of a long picture sort of conversation as well, so I'm sure we'll touch on it quite a bit. I guess this sort of second reading that's gone through Parliament as well has been quite important, because it's been quite an emotive thing. There's been a lot of politicians really talking about personal experiences and stuff, which is kind of unusual for a major bill coming through. What's it looking like at the moment? What's this, I guess, the state of this bill at this stage?
Yes. So, of course, pieces of legislation have to go through Parliament three times, mm-hmm. to be voted on three times, and it's now been through the first two stages, the first two votes, and it's got one more vote to go. So the first vote had Parliament divided, or 66 votes against 54 or something like that. This second reading, more people switched over to supporting it, so it passed by 70 to 50 votes. And so, you know, that was actually quite a surprising margin. But we still have the third vote to go, and there's a lot of people that, a lot of MPs that voted for it that said, well, we're voting in favour of it because we think we want to have more discussion on it, but we're not guaranteeing that we will vote in favour for it in the last vote. So it really is a total guess about whether this is going to pass, and I think it's going to come down to the wire. At the moment, of course, it's a conscience vote, so MPs are supposed to be able to vote any way they want, depending on what they think individually, and so that's especially the case for Labour and National MPs. And so on this last vote, I think it was about two-thirds or more of Labour MPs voted in favour of this euthanasia bill, and about two-thirds of National MPs voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand First MPs all voted in bloc for it, and all Green MPs voted in bloc for it. And, of course, ACT, David Seymour, he's the person came up with the bill, and he's for it. But, I mean, it's really contentious, and like you say, there's been a lot of emotion, but there's also been a lot of rationality.
Yeah, there has, It's a very interesting way this conversation's gone,
It has, so, and it's actually been very quality emotion and quality rational debate, and we have had MPs switching sides as they have, you know, looked at the evidence, looked at the arguments and logic, and so, it's been a really good example of parliamentary process, I think.
I think so too. Well, we'll definitely be touching base on that more further down the line because, as you said, this is a big conversation that's not going to be wrapped up in any sort of brief way, and it's going to be, a long process as well for both this and the DHB thing too, so we might touch back with that later as well. Thank you so much, Dr. Bryce Edwards, for chatting to us this morning. I hope it clears up down in Wellington for you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.